The digital world can be new and exciting, but wow, wait until you hear what some Chinese writers are thinking. Science fiction might not be your genre, but imagine, if you will, a person who's got the idea in their head to write a story about having engines as big as mountains that can stop the Earth spinning so the Earth can escape when the sun blows up. It's a pretty big idea. Nothing half-baked about that. And it comes from China. So sci-fi is now big in China, but there's a story as to why it's big in China now. And Will Dunn, who's the editor of the Statesman's policy supplement Spotlight, has written a fascinating article, How Chinese Novelists Are Reimagining Science Fiction. Reimagining's right, engines that stop the world spinning. Will Dunn, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a fascinating story. How do you think it's changed that China has become this big powerhouse of sci-fi? What happened?
Well, like a lot of countries, there have been authors in China going back over a century who have experimented with the ideas that we now call science fiction. But the particular generation, the new generation of Chinese science fiction writers who are really, really popular in China and increasingly around the world now, according to one author, a Chinese author that I spoke to, they all can kind of trace their first experience of sci-fi back to the end of the last century when they all took the same exam, because in China during the summer they have the state education exam called the Gaokao. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. It's the National College Entrance Exam. And
it's a big deal in China, those exams.
Oh, yes, absolutely huge, yeah. So it covers a lot of different subjects, but there are essay questions, and they're often about things to do with politics, but they can also be imaginative questions. And the last essay question of the last century in 1999 was to explore the idea of whether or not memories could be transplanted and what would happen if it was possible to do that. And the kids that did particularly well in that exam were the kids who had been reading a sci-fi magazine called Science Fiction World, because there had been a short story about that in the same year, a few months earlier, and it kind of fired their imaginations, and people made the link, and suddenly this science fiction magazine by the following year had about another 350,000 subscribers, and a genre that was referred to as children's literature in China. Then people decided that it was really worth their kids reading this, because it explored new ideas to do with technology and things like that that could actually be valuable to them in their education.
And is it the case that with the dramatic change that's been going on in China over the last couple of decades is a bit similar to the changes in the West around the space race and nuclear physics, you know, many decades before, that produced a whole collection of science fiction writers?
Yes, yeah, I think you can say that. So obviously, you know, in the last 20 years, life in China has changed dramatically for hundreds of millions of people. You know, they've gone from, in many cases, people living in rural agricultural settings to, you know, millions and millions of people have moved to densely populated urban settings where technology is a major part of life. And that kind of happened in the 50s and 60s, not as quickly, but yeah, as you say, the space race, nuclear physics, new ways of having power and transport. You know, new cities arrived. Certainly in the UK, we had places like, you know, Milton Keynes that were built after the Second World War. There were brand new cities that looked completely different. And that did inform a lot of writers, people like James Blish, Arthur C. Clarke. I mean, Arthur C. Clarke was a little bit earlier. Isaac Asimov, Alfred Bester. So all these people sort of were given those new technologies to play with almost. In some cases, they kind of made them up. Arthur C. Clarke famously came up with the idea for GPS, before it was actually implemented as a technology. So I think he thought of that in the 30s. It wasn't really developed until decades later. And in a way, that's kind of what Chinese science fiction writers are doing now, because that new generation that I talked about are people who are involved in technology. A lot of them have jobs in technology or technological backgrounds. So Liu Qijin, who wrote this very, very famous, enormously popular trilogy, the first book is called The Three-Body Problem, and that's probably the most famous book in Chinese sci-fi, certainly at the moment. He is originally a computer programmer, and a lot of the subjects and the kind of plot devices that he uses are based around technology and kind of explaining it and understanding it using the medium of science fiction.
He gets, well, I don't know whether they're formal endorsements, but I understand from what you've said that Barack Obama and Mark Zuckerberg are fans. So yeah, that's a pretty strong, high-profile fan base to encourage people to read those books. I'm talking to Will Dunn, editor of the Statesman Policy Supplement Spotlight, about Chinese novelists and the reimagination of science fiction. It's fascinating. Now, what about the books being used in China as a way of writing some criticism of the government disguised as a story?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's something that has happened in the West too. So George Orwell, of course, famously wrote Animal Farm as a sort of veiled critique of the Soviet state at a time when a lot of people in England were kind of, especially intellectuals in his circle, were sort of fellow travellers and thought that it was all going well over there. And so he saw that as the best way to frame that criticism, and of course wrote sci-fi himself in The Shape of 1984. But in the case of modern China, I think writers do have to be quite careful about what they say. Censorship is widespread, and works that are thought to be critical of the government or to be kind of not on message can be censored very, very quickly. But Chinese science fiction authors can get around this because, certainly as one author told me, the fact that they're writing something that is so clearly fiction, because it's set in space, it's felt to be safe ground for them to play in and experiment with ideas and to be a bit more free with what they say and the kind of commentary that they make. But they do still need to be careful, because even a veiled criticism can be taken the wrong way.
But it's a very interesting concept that you take something like sci-fi that many people think, well, that's the stuff for kids or something, can actually be quite a powerful medium for passing on a social commentary message. Now, this fellow Chen Qifan has got a book coming out soon, The Waste Tide. Well, that's something that perhaps, I'm not sure how many people worry about this. All these solar panels we've got everywhere and these electric batteries we've got, you know, they've all got stuff in them that in the end has to be disposed of somewhere. What's the story about him and why he wrote that book?
So he grew up in Guangdong. I should just apologize to any Mandarin speakers who are listening for my consistent mispronunciation of most Mandarin words, Chinese place names. And
I don't think you need to apologize. I think the Chinese are as friendly as us. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
Thank you. I hope so. So, yeah, he grew up in an area that was close to a e-waste processing plant. And it's not actually done so much in China now, but certainly in recent decades, China has been the kind of, as well as the factory of the world, it's been the kind of recycling plant of the world. Yeah. And e-waste recycling kind of involves a lot of melting things down.
It's not cheap.
No. And if it's done cheaply, it's also done in a way that is extremely polluting. And so Chen Qifan, he writes under an anglicized name, Stanley Chen. He told me that he went to this place, it's not far from where he grew up, and just saw people kind of melting down circuit boards, you know, dissolving things in acid, sort of pools of, you know, green liquid, the air thick with smoke. And the idea of pollution as a concern is something that affects quite a lot of, especially younger Chinese people who live in and around big cities. And so he took that as the inspiration to start a novel set in that kind of environment.
Mm. You mentioned a story, The City of Silence, written by Ma Bo-yong, if that's how you say it, that really did have to be heavily censored because it describes a brutal regime that monitors and controls everything its citizens write or speak. And given the publicity around now to, you know, if you're not a jaywalker, if you pay your bills on time, you'll be able to catch the fast train, the tremendous surveillance that's now in place in China, you can understand why they had to be careful writing that book.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's something that Orwell certainly would have recognised. You mentioned jaywalking there. For anyone who's not familiar with that, it's, you know, the cities in China use facial recognition cameras to capture the identities of people jaywalking and to, in some cases, put their faces and names up on big billboards above the crossing and that kind of thing. It's quite dystopian to people who don't live there.
If you can produce drones that look and fly like birds, that are so good that real pigeons flock with them, you know, it's a very strange world, isn't it?
It is. And there are stories that reflect that in really interesting ways. So there's a collection of short stories by Chinese science fiction writers that I'd recommend. It's called Invisible Planets. It was collected by Ken Liu, who's one of the main translators of science fiction. But it has stories from most of the big names in this new wave of writers, because a lot of traditional Chinese stories involve animals. And it's really interesting to see the way that animals are represented in this new, strange technological world that's developing in China. So there's a great story in there by Chen Qifan called The Year of the Rat, which is about kind of biotechnology, and also it has some social commentary in there. I don't want to say too much about the stories, but I don't want to do too many plot spoilers. This is definitely a name I'm going to mispronounce, but there's a writer called Xia Jia who has a couple of stories in there, one called 100 Ghosts Parade Tonight and another called Night Journey of the Dragon Horse. They really feel like traditional Chinese stories. They involve, you know, ghosts and animals that act in a kind of sentient way, but they're set in a very technological future. And it's fascinating to see the way that that kind of tradition is adapted. And it's, I guess, emblematic of that contradiction in modern China of, you know, it's a place with thousands of years of history, but also it's the place where the future is happening technologically and socially, perhaps as well.
Will Dunn, editor of the Statesman Policy Supplement Spotlight, thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure. Thank you, Amanda. 你告诉我,情形很高,似懂非懂,
well, that's it for this week. Thanks, by the way, for your comments on last week. I enjoyed the segment we had on universities and just what they are teaching and whether, in fact, they're putting some students off. Thought it was a good one, and so did you. Anyway, if you've got some comments to make, just go to abc.net.au/Radio National and follow the prompts to Counterpoint. Until next week, this is Amanda Vanstone saying hasta la vista.回来陪你变老好不好不要什么世界主教只要一个拥抱好不好最亮的星星我已看到生命未来有你照耀 回家的路我会微笑我在想你你知不知道看看天空里我会明了